Once again, the phone number to call is 929-205-6099. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995. And the password, easy to remember because it's 995-995-99. Instructions for signing on to the meeting, including a link for listening over the web, is available on WBAI's main webpage, WBAI.org. Thanks for listening to all these numbers, and we hope you will join us at the Town Hall May 23rd at 7 p.m. for a discussion on media and the news. This is WBAI New York.
Stay tuned for Randy Credico's Live on the Fly coming up. It's 2:30 p.m.
Okay, good evening or good afternoon, everybody. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico Live on the Fly here on 99.5 FM in New York City, WBAI.org, and of course, give to WBAI.org to support this station or call 212-209-2950. It really is critical that you support this station. You know, today I had Arthur Schwartz, who's running for city council, scheduled to take questions and talk about his race and talk about what's happening at Pacifica, being that he is the general counsel. So we'll do that next Wednesday. So call in next Wednesday and you can ask Arthur some questions. I want to send my condolences to Cornel West, the loss of his mother and brother over the last couple of weeks. I love you, brother. Stay strong. And the reason why we are not having Arthur Schwartz is because a dear friend of mine, a close friend of mine, a dear friend to everybody in prison, the great actor Charles Grodin, who won a Kunstler Award for his great work with prisoners, died yesterday. It's a big shock. I've dropped a lot of tears. He's done so much for so many people. And I got three of them on today. Three people that used to reside together at Bedford Hills Prison until Charles Grodin came along, and they are not now all out. They had served about 40 or 50 years between them, serving life sentences. And two of them have been on this show before, Jan Warren, Elaine Bartlett, and making her debut on this show is June Benson. Are you all there, ladies?
Yes, hi, Randy. I'm here. Yes.
All right. So I guess I talked about BAI at the beginning. Just quickly, how important was it up there at Bedford Hills, this station?
It was amazing to be able to receive the signal and have the radios that they allowed us to listen to shows like Democracy Now! And On the Count we had there, and it helped us stay connected to the world, Randy.
And, of course, Grandpa Al Lewis and all the organizing that was done through the station. I know women up there still listen to it, and it's invaluable that we keep the station afloat. And so let's get right into it. Should we all start crying together? You know, the loss of Charles Grodin.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Randy, we think we have all the time in the world to stay connected, and then before you know it, you know, this moment comes. I'm deeply saddened by the loss of Charles. He was such a kind soul. He had a heart of gold, and his visit to us at Bedford Hills, and Elaine and June both know it meant everything. It gave us hope.
Elaine, let me ask you, how did you first meet Grodin? I think I brought him up there, but what was it like when you first met him?
When I first met Charles Grodin, it was just unbelievable because I looked at him as a child, you know, coming up with Beethoven and stuff. I always looked at him. He was one of the actors that I always enjoyed watching on TV. And to have him in Bedford interviewing me, you know, I spoke to him about being in three worlds, you know, the incarcerated world, the visiting room, the whole during to before incarceration.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was, cause at that time you did not have, let's be honest. He got both you in 2000, you and Jan Clemency, along with Arlene Obert.
And
right?
Arlene Obert. Yes. And that was the year that Bataki gave clemency to five people for the first time.
Well, it was just amazing. Mm-hmm. I'll get to you in a second, June, because your case was 10 years later. Mm-hmm. But you all knew each other in prison. Jan, did you ever think you were going to get out? You had a life sentence on the other side. Did Charles's visit, how much did it mean to every? Did it galvanize the women up there, having Charles come in there and flack for everybody?
Absolutely. Randy, he came up, he spoke with us and just really made a connection with all of us. And then he was back in no time with a camera, and he made a video that he took to a breakfast with the Republican leaders in Albany and said, "You have got to do something." And I am forever and eternally grateful that they listened to him, because that was the type of message they wanted to hear. You know, we were ready to go. And yes, you know, 15 to life, as most of us had, was unfathomable to see the end of. You just didn't know.
And Elaine was doing 20 to life at that time, separated from her kids. You were separated from your kids. And June, in 1 second, I want to get to your case and as soon as I'm done talking about these Rockefeller laws. You know, the whole thing started with the help of WBAI. We organized, Tony Papa and I, and the Kunstler Fund, organized a vigil May 8th, 1998. Tom Haines and others, Anthony Papa, I just mentioned his name. I know he's listening, so I want to give him a stroke. But we used to go up to the prison buses. It was called Prison Gap, going up to the state prisons. And we organized, we sent forms, you sent back pictures, and we stood in front of Rockefeller Center every Thursday for like a year or 2 years. I don't know. Al Lewis used to show up. And then Charles was there on the very first day with his producer. They got a little videotape of the kid, Arlene Obert's kid, Lisa Obert, who was 10 years old. And that, like, it from that point on, it exploded. It exploded. All right, so let me get to, am I right? Am I right there? And then you four were on. He took it to Joe Bruno and to Dale Volcker and all the Republicans, and they lobbied the governor, and you guys were out that year.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Leah Bundy took another year. Let me, June, how did you first meet Charles Grodin?
I met Charles Grodin through you.
I wrote to you,
and next thing I know, you were in the visiting room with Charles Grodin, and I was like, "What? What's going on?" It was just life changing from there.
He was driven crazy by your case. You were doing a 52-year to life sentence as an addict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
But the thing is, all three of you stayed in contact. You started calling him your father after a while, or your uncle or something, didn't you?
Yes, Dad, absolutely. Dad, he called me daughter. I called him Dad. My kids call him Grandpa. And it was beautiful. We had a beautiful relationship.
And he stayed around with you.
The visiting room. He did.
Yes.
He did. the first two or three years, once he, you know, and then, you know, it started to dwindle. So we kind of knew something was going on because he would never be out of touch. Never, ever.
Right.
He came to visit me once or twice a week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember he wrote about it. He wrote about a lunch. He called it a beautiful lunch. It was in the Daily News. I just looked at it. It was Jan. It was Tony Papa. Elaine. Arlene wasn't there because she had died after that stressful time in prison.
Right.
And that's it. It was stressful in the prison. The food was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the depression, everything, it was had such a toll. And some people, like you three, survived it, but others really don't psychologically. Am I right?
Mm-mm. We don't. You're right. You're absolutely right.
So, and you, Elaine, I know that he took special interest in your kids, especially your oldest son. Tell us about that, how he stayed in contact with them.
He stayed in contact with me and the kids. He always wanted to know how I was doing. He would invite me to his shows and his plays and stuff, and, you know, I met his kid. He was an amazing man, and he's truly going to be missed. He judged us for who he was. He looked at us as a human being and not a number.
Yes, he did, Elaine.
You know, for 16 years, I was looked at as 84-G-0068, and when I met him, you know, he was reading my daughter's letter that she had wrote for clemency, you know, begging the governor to, you know, give me a second chance and let me come home and stuff. And he was just an amazing man, you know.
He was, yeah, I got to tell you something. He would drive me crazy every day. He says, you got to get June, some permission from Governor Patterson, who gave you clemency. It was Patterson.
Right.
He would get me, you got to get her so she can move down to Delaware. If she doesn't get this certificate, he would be calling me up every single day on top of it. All right?
Yeah.
And he's always asking me, how's Jan doing? How's Elaine doing? Always.
Yes, he's such an awesome man. And honestly, Randy, so are you. Because without you, we would not have Charles.
Isn't that
so
right?
Thank you
Absolutely.
For being an incredible man for us as well.
Well, you know, I got
you
wore
still
down.
Are, Randy.
What?
And you still are, and we still love you.
Yes.
So don't ever feel that people don't love you. And
Yeah, well, I love you guys, too.
Yes.
I know Charles did, and I loved him. Mm-hmm. You know, I really loved Merle.
We loved him, too.
He was a remarkable person. He actually got things done. You got people who talk a lot. They write. They bark. You know, he did all of that. Plus, he got things done. You know?
Yes, he did.
He was like Schindler. He'd go in there and pull people out as many as he could. Harriet Tubman, he tried to get as many people out of the behind the razor wire into back to their homes to their kids. You guys all have kids. Jan, you suffered a lot being away from your kid, right?
Yes, she was across the country. I saw her 7 times in 12 years. It was very difficult, and I'm happy to say I'm now living 4 miles away from her. And it's kind of interesting how the circle closes on such a important time. But Randy, just quickly, I have a quick anecdote. I was released in living in Manhattan, and I went to a 92nd Street Y program that I believe it was Judy Gold was interviewing Charles Grodin. And unbeknownst to him, I was in the audience. And when he was asked by Judy, what do you consider your most important achievement in life? And very quickly he said, well, without question, my children. But more importantly, I got 3 women out of prison.
That was way back.
Wow.
Actually, 4. A lot more than that.
Yes.
He did some national
stuff. That was the beginning. And I'll tell you, I just got goosebumps again because I couldn't believe I was sitting there hearing that and knowing that I, Elaine, Lisa, Arlene, you know, we were the beginning, June, and he started a foundation. so to help.
Yes.
And remember, lend a hand.
Is it lend a hand?
Lend a hand.
So you guys all know that was the most important thing to him was.
Yeah, he wrote about us in his advocacy book. That's right.
Just around him to know what was really drove him. It wasn't acting. He did that to make money so he could support his causes. That's not what he wanted to be remembered for. He wanted to be remembered for the great work, and he's a great example for others that put their career aside and focus on doing good. You know, you make money, but you gotta do good. He made his money, he got his stardom, he wrote books, but, you know, he was focused on this more than anything. And I had numerous conversations. He loved all of you. June, I know that that there was financial problems. He would help you out. If you guys needed anything, he would help you out. And I think it was you, Lane, and Jan in 2006 that gave him the Kuntzer Award, right?
Yes. And he got me my first job when I had a hard time getting a job, and I had went on 52 interviews. He got me my job with Help USA.
Right. I know. Listen, he drove me crazy on that one, too. You got to get Elaine a job. You know, talk to Maria Cuomo. Let's go. Let's get this thing done. He looked at you guys like you were his own family.
You know? He treated us like that, too, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's how he treated us.
Yeah.
Randy, remember when we had lunch with Judge Marks at the deli
and
Charles? And it was a big surprise. He was sitting in a baseball cap, just like a regular guy. But his smile lit up the room when we walked in. It was amazing.
Yeah, he always wore that baseball hat when he wasn't there. I remember how happy he was to get that award, the William Kuntzer Fund for Racial Justice, because he's the type of guy that is a role model for anyone. Is in the business, or just anybody in particular, you know, this guy deserved a racial justice award because most of the people he got out were African American.
Yeah.
Honest.
He touched a lot of lives, and he touched a lot of our family members' lives too, as well.
Absolutely.
Do you have any story, June? Any personal story that you'd like to share about Charles? Any anecdote?
Quite a few, honestly. I know when I first met him that day that you guys came to visit, that was a very poignant moment in our lives. I know I went back up to the dorm and I called my mother and I told her, and she screamed, she yelled, "Oh my God, I never heard my mother cry like that. He saved our lives." Like, my mom, she lived 20 years without me. And
right.
Charles made it so I can make it back to my mother with my children whole in Delaware, where he called so many people here in Delaware. And I had no idea he didn't know. He just called and was like, "Okay, this needs to be done. This needs to happen." I had a job. I had a home of my own. I didn't have to live with my mother for too long. I mean, he was my father. He was literally in the father role, in the grandfather role. So I cannot ever thank him or his family for lending him to us.
Yeah. That's right.
I cannot thank anybody enough. I will never, ever forget him. He's just amazing. Just like Elaine and Jan said, like, we all agree. He's one incredible man. He was amazing. And he will forever be.
Right, right. They should build a statue.
He will forever be to us.
Go ahead, Jan. What were you saying?
The thought came to me after you called me yesterday that he had a heart of gold and fathomless compassion. And he's really a giant among mortals. He really was. He is that kind of person that comes once in a lifetime, practically, you know.
Yeah, he's the comet. Comet that Herman Melville called John Brown. He really was a guy. He got more people out of prison than most lawyers. You know what I mean?
Yes, he did.
Oh, yes, he did.
But he was nonstop. He was unflappable, indefatigable, and would just move and march and not stop. And continued on. First of all, people think when I said between you did 20 years, you did 16, Jan did 10 or 12. So that's like almost 50 years there. And we guys must have been like the female Hannibal Lecters. You must have committed some incredible crimes. How many people did you kill, Jan?
Oh, my God. You know, if I told you, I'd have to, you know, get a little violent, I guess. I don't know. You know, taking cocaine and, of course, under the Rockefeller drug laws, that was based on weight. So all I had to have was 3 grains like a salt shaker in my hand, and it would have been the same sentence. Charles was one like yourself and many, many others that realized that it was a nonsensical law, and we all worked very hard to change it, and it wasn't taken away, but boy, we did make a difference. Another 5 years after prison of my life was spent to make that change. Elaine standing shoulder to shoulder all those times from Albany to New York City and anywhere else we could go and let people know how wrong it was.
Yeah, you guys both, both of you were there everywhere, as was Tony Papa and Terrence Stevens. Yes. And all the other Hannibal Lecters that didn't even commit a crime. You got set up in Lane. You got set up with this racist judge up in Albany. And I think the same judge that up in Albany, which I think is the most racist
judge
town
Klein.
In the state. Keegan, was that his name? And so did you.
Judge Keegan. I had Keegan.
Mm-hmm. You both got Keegan, and Keegan was this big white racist. Mm-hmm. He didn't wear a robe. He wore a white. He may as well worn a white sheet and a hood. But he did the same thing to you and to both of you guys, gals. Am I right, June? So you got incredible 52-year prison sentence.
Yeah,
27 and a half to 55 years.
Yeah, 25 to 50. I mean, it's like a war criminal. You guys got all of that time, and when you were in, you realized that all the people under the Rockefeller drug laws were almost exclusively black and Latino. Or poor white woman from Idaho by the name of Jan Warren, or from El Monte.
But Randy, the crazy thing about it, that the law was for the kingpin, and we didn't meet one kingpin in there. It was only us.
It sure didn't.
You know?
No.
I did 16 years, and I can't tell you a kingpin that I met in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, I know how I studied that. I had profiled so many cases, thousands of cases. I didn't come across a kingpin. I didn't even come across a middle pin. You know, I got pins that were run over with a bowling ball. That's what I ran across, you guys,
and
all the time that you put
in my pocket when I got arrested.
You had $5 in your pocket. That's just amazing.
And I had a French fry in my hand.
You had a French fry in your hand. What about you, young lady from Delaware?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't have a dime.
I didn't have a dime.
I did not have a dime.
Well, this has gone by so quickly. Let's take a 20-second moment of silence for Charlie. Okay, may he rest in peace. God bless him.
May he rest.
Amen.
May he rest in peace.
All right.
And my condolences to his family. And
I love you guys. I love all three of you.
We love you too, Randy.
We love you. And don't ever doubt that.
Love you so much.
All right. We're gonna go out here because I'm starting to cry. So I'm going to play my mother's favorite tune, Smile, written by Charlie Chaplin, as sung by Nat King Cole. You guys, this has been WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. See you this week with a very special show Saturday at 6 p.m. Bye-bye.
heart is aching. Smile even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today brushed off President Biden's call for a significant de-escalation of the conflict in Gaza, saying he is determined to continue the operation against Hamas. Biden spoke to Netanyahu early Wednesday, and the White House said to, quote, had a detailed discussion of the state of events in Gaza, Israel's progress in degrading the capabilities of Hamas and other terrorist elements, and the ongoing diplomatic efforts by regional governments and the United States. Israeli fighter jets continue to strike the Gaza Strip, flattening residential buildings and killing at least four Palestinians, including a journalist. Fears are mounting of a deepening humanitarian crisis in Gaza, already besieged by an Egyptian-Israeli blockade since 2007 that has weakened the territory's infrastructure. The Israeli onslaught, now in its 10th day, has damaged 17 hospitals and clinics in Gaza and destroyed its only coronavirus test laboratory. Six of Gaza's 10 electricity lines are down. The attacks have also damaged water infrastructure, including pipelines, water wells, and pumping stations, with wastewater leaking into the streets. Close to a quarter million of Gaza's residents are without access to clean drinking water. At least 219 Palestinians, including 63 children, have been killed in the Israeli strikes. The UN says at least 58,000 Palestinians have been internally displaced and made homeless. At least 12 Israelis have died in the conflict. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said today that he will oppose legislation to create a commission to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol, a signal that the legislation would not have the votes to get through the Senate. Quote, after careful consideration, I've made the decision to oppose the House Democrats' slanted and unbalanced proposal or another commission to study the events of January the 6th, McConnell said on the Senate floor. The bipartisan commission would have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, five on each side. The attorneys for the family of Andrew Brown Jr. are asking the Department of Justice to intervene after a North Carolina district attorney said yesterday that the deputies who shot and killed Andrew Brown, a black man, were justified in their actions and that Brown endangered them by recklessly driving in their direction. The DA's account and decision stand in stark contrast to comments from Brown's family and their attorneys. They said the 44-second clip released by the DA
shows that Brown was never a threat to officers as he tried to drive away from them. They called the killing an execution.